for the introduction. So what I will talk about is about fair allocation and how it's related to the Rainbow Cycle number. And at the end, I will talk how we use the SATmodus symmetry framework to compute these Rainbow Cycle numbers. So what is fair allocation? We have some goods, and we want to divide it by different ages. So in this case, we have a woman and a man, and we have three goods, a house, a laptop, and a paperclip. And for an allocation, we want to split the goods. So we want to allocate to each agent some goods. And of course, this allocation should be pairwise disjoint, so not both of them can have the laptop. And we want to allocate all of the goods. If we don't allocate all of the goods, we are talking about partial allocations, where we can keep some of the goods unassigned. And if we want to talk about how good an allocation is, we also need some valuation functions. So for each subset of the goods and for each agent or for each person, we have some valuation which tells us whether the person likes this or the person doesn't like it. So here, for example, we can see the laptop is valued by the woman with 1,000 and by the man by 900. And for example, the house and the paperclip have these valuations. These valuations don't have any restrictions in general, but for some theoretical arguments later, some restrictions are added or are interesting. Yeah, now we can talk about some good allocations and how to define them. And we have something called envy-freeness. And an allocation is envy-free if we can split up the goods such that for every two person, the person prefers his own goods more than the goods from any other person. But this doesn't work in general because, for example, if we look at this example, no matter which person has the house will be the most happiest and everybody else will envy this person. So there is some other notion called envy-free allocation up to any good. And the difference is that instead of just taking the goods of the other person, we can remove any goods. So no matter which good, we remove from another person, then my own good is better. So this is envy-free up to any good. And yeah, last but not least, we have envy with charity, so we can just give away some stuff and nobody gets it. Yeah. And one of the biggest open questions is whether there always exists an EFX allocation. And there are some partial results. For example, if you only have two agents, then it's fine. If you have three agents and an additive valuation, so if, for example, if you have two different goods and you just sum up the valuations, then it's also fine. But in general, it's an open question. And therefore, another version exists, namely the approximative EFX. And there we additionally introduce a constant alpha. And now we say the same as AFX, but we say we don't envy another person if we can remove any good from it and multiply it by some constants smaller or equal to one. And then we still prefer our own good, so we are happy with our own one. And for that, we can use the Rainbow Cycle number. So what is the Rainbow Cycle number? The Rainbow Cycle number is the largest integer such that there exists a k-partite-directed graph with each block of size d such that every vertex has an incoming edge from each other block. So here we have our k-blocks, and for example, this vertex has an incoming edge from here and from here. And there is no rainbow cycle. So a rainbow cycle is just a directed cycle which contains contains at most one vertex from each block and is a directed cycle. So here we might have a rainbow cycle. Yeah, and now how does this relate to the EFX? And there is one theorem. I will not go very into the details, but the theorem basically states that if we have small, if the rainbow cycle number is small, depending on D, then we can find a good EFX allocation with at most this many unallocated items. Yeah, that's the theorem. And there are, in the original paper, they proved some bounds on these rainbow numbers depending on D. In the original work, they showed that the rainbow cycle number D is bounded by D to the power 4 plus D. And they motivated it and said that it's a quite interesting problem, and computing this number on itself is also interesting. In the meantime, it was improved to D times log D. And we want to compute the exact numbers for small numbers. So for D, for 2 it's known, for 3 it's known, but for 4 it's already an open case. And the general conjecture is that this rainbow cycle number is exactly D. Yeah, and how do we want to do it? We want to show that every D plus 1 partite graph with the properties I explained before contains a rainbow cycle. And that's what we want to show. And one idea would to just enumerate all the graphs up to isomorphism, but this is not really a good idea, because if we have like D4, then we have 5 blocks. Each of these blocks has 4 vertices, so we have 20 vertices in total. We have directed graphs, and for example, for 14 vertices, we already have like a lot of directed graphs, so this is a big problem. So a generate and test approach is not feasible. So we cannot just generate all the graphs and then check them for the rainbow cycle number. So what we use is the SAT modulo summative framework, and the idea is to just encode the problem into SAT by fixing the number of vertices, and for each vertex pair, we introduce a variable EUV, which tells us whether there is an edge or there isn't an edge. Now we can just feed this property into our solver, and then we get a result. But this has some disadvantages, because we have a lot of symmetries. So what are symmetries? If we talk about graphs, we can basically permute all the vertices and essentially get the same graph, and this gives us the same properties. So what we want to do is we want to somehow exclude these isomorphic copies from our search space, and therefore we use something called a canonization, so a canonical form. So if we have one graph and all of its permutations, then we want to have a unique representative, which is its canonical form. And then our goal is to just produce these canonical objects with the additional restrictions. So here we can see that our G3 is our canonical form, and all these other graphs are also permutations from this graph. So now what we could do, or what the idea would be in principle, is to just have our property, then add some constraints which ensure that it's canonical, feed it to the solver, and get a result. But there's one big problem. There's no known polynomial size encoding for canonicity. Yeah, so what we do is we use a dynamic symmetry picking approach and just feed the property in our solver, and then the solver communicates with a propagator, which checks whether our graph is canonical. But during solving, the full graph is not known, so we have these dashed edges, which are not known to be present or not to be present. But if we can already show that this doesn't lead to a canonical graph, then we can learn a clause and continue until we get a result. Yeah, so let me talk a little bit more about this partially defined graphs and the canonical form. So here we see a partially defined graph with the dashed edges, and we can say we can extend a graph to a fully defined graph by either removing these dashed edges or adding them. And so for this partially defined graphs, we have this 8 possible extensions to fully defined graphs. And now we can say that a partially defined graph is non-canonical if for every graph in the extension set there exists a permutation which makes the graph lexicographically smaller. So we can show for each graph in the extension that it's not in a canonical form. And then in our rework, we use a little bit weaker form, which we can easier check. Namely, we can check whether a graph is certified non-canonical. And here we just swap the quantifiers. So we say there is a permutation such that for each graph in the extension set, this one permutation makes it smaller. And we can efficiently search for this, but in the worst case, it's still taking exponential time. But yeah, but in practice, it works quite well. So if we look again, this is now our picture. We get our partially defined graph. We learn a clause if it is not certified canonical. And we can also store the certificate for some verification later. Now if we talk again about this rainbow cycle number, we have an additional property. We don't want to have any rainbow cycle in it. Now, one way is to explicitly exclude each rainbow cycle, but this encoding would be exponential in size. So we can just use a second propagator, namely with a SAT solver, if we have a fully defined graph, we can just search whether there is a rainbow cycle. And if there is one, then we add a clause which blocks our rainbow cycle, and then we can continue again. For the existential part, we can just add it in at the beginning, which basically consists of every vertex has an incoming edge from each other block. Yeah, with this, we were able to show that the rainbow cycle number is not greater than 4 for free within 1 second. The case 4 we could show in 23 minutes, and for the case 5 we didn't get a result yet. We also introduced one technique to speed up the search a little bit more, which is called invariant pruning. And the idea is to take some invariant and strengthen it over time. So we start with the maximum in-degree, so the in-degree is just the number of incoming edges. And we can fix it to some theoretical upper bound, which we already know. And then we can say without loss of generality, our first vertex has the maximum in-degree. And if we now can show the unsatisfiability of our formula with fixed in-degree, then in the next step, we can assume in-degree at most the maximum one minus one for all the other vertices. So basically we fix one vertex, show that it cannot have this in-degree, and then we can also apply this to all the other vertices. And then we can just continue with a slightly decreased maximum in-degree and try to make this invariant smaller and smaller. Yeah, and with that, we were able to speed up the case for rainbow number 4 a lot, because we were able to show that the in-degree is smaller or equal to 4 within 3 seconds. And then we just showed the unsatisfiability with in-degree in half a minute. So we had like a 50 times speed up just by this technique. For the rainbow number 5, we have some partial results. We were able to show that the in-degree is at most 6 within roughly 4 or 5 days. But yeah, as I already mentioned, we were not able to refute the remaining case, so this is still an open case. Yeah, let's look at the time, but I think it should. Okay, I'm a little bit rushing a little bit too much. What we can also do is we can get some kind of proofs for our results. And basically the part the SAT solver does, we can just check with a derived proof. So we produce a derived proof, get a certified checker, and see whether the reasoning of the SAT solver is okay. But we have some additional parts. For example, we add the symmetry breaking clauses. And how we check this is we have this certificate for non-canonicity, which is more or less a permutation which produces a clause. And if we have this certificate, we can just check for each of the symmetry breaking clauses whether it's correct or not. And for the co-entry property, so for this, there is no rainbow cycle, we also just store this cycle, and then we can also check these clauses. Yeah, to sum up, we talked about fair allocations and especially about EFX. and the connection to our rainbow cycle number, and how we can compute this with submodular symmetries. And we were able to settle the case with d equals to 4, with a proof. But in the future, we also hope to settle the case 5, but we believe that we need some further mathematical insights. So for example, we some insights how we can restrict the problems a little bit more without loss of generality. Then we want to apply invariant pruning to other highly symmetric problems, but there the challenge is always to find a suitable invariant which works well, so we cannot just take any invariant. And of course, one interesting thing would also be to try to compute a counterexample to the EFX, because this is still an open problem. So our source code is available online for the submodular symmetry framework. So if you have some interesting graph problem, you can just check it out, or you can just ask me. And yeah, we can try to prove or disprove some conjectures. Then thank you for your attention, and I'm looking forward to your questions.
Thank you, Marcus. Any questions?
You are trying to check the upper bound or something like this, right? But why don't you just directly check for the equals?
You mean that
I mean, you just assume the conjecture is true, right?
Yeah.
And then we, so RD equals D or whatever that is, and then you just check whether is there a solution.
Okay, maybe I can answer this quickly. For there is some graph with exactly D blocks. So if you have like number D, then there is already a known solution for D. But you have to show that D plus 1 is unsatisfiable to show that the rainbow number is exactly D, if that's the question.
Okay.
Or did I miss the
point?
No,
but maybe it's to do with the fairness bit. Never mind.
Not really about this paper, but your earlier work. Can you tell us a bit more about how the symmetry breaker search is done? I mean, for your finding that this partial graph is certainly non-canonical?
Yeah, so you're referring to basically this part. So we are looking for a permutation which makes all extensions smaller. And how we do this is by basically starting searching for a permutation and fixing the first element. And then we can do some propagation. For example, in a canonical graph, a lexicographically minimal one, we will always have the first line will always be zeros and then all ones. So we can already, after the first step, if we fix the first vertex by some permutation, we can already split up our vertices into the ones which are adjacent to this one, which are not adjacent, and then we have this some vertices which we don't know. And this gives us a lot of propagation, and then we continue with the second vertex, and this is how we compute it. And for many problems, it works quite well. Sometimes we have to abort it because it still takes too much time.
Any at the far back?
Hello, so two questions. Do you have any plans for certification of your results?
I mean, we have some kind of certificates. So what do you mean exactly? Because we have like certificates for the SAT solver, for the reasoning of the SAT solver. Mm-hmm. We check all our symmetry breaking clauses, and checking whether a clause excludes a rainbow cycle is also easy.
Okay, so it's fully certified.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we don't have like, for this two parts, we don't have formally verified checkers, but in principle, we could do it.
Yeah, okay. And what is the bottleneck in this approach? So where does the solver spend most of its time?
In searching the graph. So this search space is huge, and really looking for this for some of these graphs. Yeah, because we really have to exclude all of the graphs, And if we are able to somehow prune this a little bit more by, for example, having some further degree constraints or some relations, how the degree distribution will be, then this would definitely speed up our search. So this is the bottleneck.
But the propagator is cheap that you have.
Yeah, relatively, okay. Relatively. So I wouldn't say it's the bottleneck.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions for Marcus? At the front.
Kind of following up my own question, but so the only thing for symmetry breaking is this external thing. You don't use some tricks, like Mike Kodish has some tricks about how to encode the graph problem, so that some of the symmetries are impossible just using causal approaches.
Yeah, the problem is, I mean, this was the motivation why we introduced the SAT modular symmetry framework, is because this Kodish approach does only an incomplete symmetry breaking. And with this, we get a complete symmetry breaking and allowed us to speed up a lot of problems.
All right, but you don't use like his model and then this on top because...
No.
Okay.
No, we don't use it. In principle, it would be compatible, but I tried it at some problems, and not for this, if I'm honest, but for most of them, it didn't give me any pen. It didn't speed up the search.
Right, okay. I think we're going to leave it at that. Thank you very much, Marcus.
Thank you, too.